Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. The world will not get any better if we just let it be. We gotta change it. Just you and me. We got to wake up, everyone, and we'd like to welcome you today to Missing Pages of History, Saturday, September the 7th, 2019. To schedule agenda for today, we include a major thing is news from the outside. That's our theme for today. Our schedule order events, we include giving you something to think about. What is freedom? Black mini facts. After Black mini facts, which we will interview the personality of the month, which is A Cure of Hope, followed by the theme today, news from the outside. And then we'll close out with what's going on with MPH and announcements. That is our schedule for today. You can always call in and participate. Back calling in at 818-337-0016. 818-337-0016. We thank today's program will be an informative program, so you might want to get you some pen and paper and write down this information that we're going to acquire, that we have acquired to make sure that you get it, so we can use information as a tool to advance our people and our community. This is Missing Pages of History. And right now, what we want to do is actually give you something to think about. And we talk about this concept all the time, which is what is freedom. I will give you three concepts of freedom, And you tell me which one of them applies to your life. The first concept is freedom, to ask nothing, to expect nothing, to depend on nothing. That came from Ayn Rand. Another concept of freedom is a man who believes in freedom will do anything under the sun to acquire or preserve his freedom. Let me repeat that again. Do you recognize who made that statement? A man who believes in freedom will do anything under the sun to acquire or preserve his freedom. That was Malcolm X. And the last concept of freedom is, what then is freedom? It says the power to live as one wishes. What then is freedom? It's the power to live as one wishes, by Marcus Cicero. That's an interesting concept of freedom. It's the key of the power to live as one wish. Does that make you free? So those are some concepts for today to think about freedom as we go down our journey, as we continue to fight for our freedom. What we're going to do right now, we're going to have a quick station break, and when we come back, we're going to come back with Susie and some Black Men Facts, her MPH. We'll be right back. This is Missing Pages of History. you back to MPH. That song is so timely, timeless. This is a world of a ball of confusion. And with knowledge and information, we can cut through the confusion and bring some clarity. This is what we want to do at MPH Radio. And one of the processes of doing this is to provide our people with their history, the contributions that they have made to humanity. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to a segment called MPH Chosen Black Minifact by Susie. We're going to bring Susie in. Susie, welcome to MPH.
Good evening. Okay, religion. Faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase. And that was a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Throughout history, religion has served as a catalyst for change. African Americans founded separate denominations in protest against unequal and restrictive treatment by mainstream churches. Early African American churches also served as a united voice against slavery and racism. These same congregations reach out to aid their brothers and sisters with a network of safety and support, including clothing, banks, assistance for single parents, and mentoring programs. And one of the, I'm going to start with some of the previous individuals who have made a difference in our history. Richard Allen, from 1760 to 1831, was born into slavery in 1760 in Philadelphia. Eventually, he brought his freedom and he became active in teaching and preaching at St. George's Methodist Episcopal Church. Soon Allen and others saw the need to open a separate church for African-American worshipers, which eventually resulted in the formation of a new denomination, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME, in 1816. Church members elected Allen bishop, making him the first African-American bishop in the United States. In addition to his duties in the church, Allen operated a stop on the Underground Railroad and worked actively for abolition. And that's one fact, many fact of our history. The next one is from Jerina Lee, 1783 to 1850, traveled 2,325 miles and preached 178 sermons in 1 year as a part of her crusade as a traveling minister. In 1819, Richard Allen of the AME Church granted her permission to preach after turning her away 8 years before. After he witnessed Lee deliver an urgent appeal to the congregation during the visiting minister's sermon, Allen changed his mind, believing that Lee was called to her work by God. As she traveled, Lee faced many difficulties as an African-American woman, but was able to inspire thousands throughout her preaching and her published autobiography. And last minute fact dealing with religion, it's James A. Healy. 1830 to 1900, became one of the first African-American Catholic priests and was ordained at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 1854. Because of his accomplishments as a priest in Boston, Pope Pius appointed Healy to the position of second bishop of Portland, Maine. He was officially ordained Bishop of Portland on June 2nd, 1875. During his 25 years at the head of the diocese, Healy oversaw the establishment of more than 60 new churches, 68 missions, and a number of new convents and schools. And there you have our many black facts for today, September the 7th. And it's sources from the African American Heritage Calendar 2017.
All right, Susan, we'd like to thank you for your MPH Black Many Facts. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to a station break, and when we come back, we're going to do our Personality of the Month, Sister Akil Holt. She's our Personality of the Month. And when we talk about we're going to teach our church or something, she's a good example of it. So we'll be back with our Personality of the Month in a few minutes. You are listening to the MPH Radio. Welcome back to MPH Radio, and we agree, loving yourself is one of the greatest love of them all. And right now, we're about to share some love with you by introducing you to our personality of the month, Sister Akil Holt. Now, she is a very interesting young lady, and one of the things we like doing on Missing Pages of History is to not only educate our people about our history in the past, but also make history in the present. And she's a good example of that, and we want to learn from her experiences, so we'd like to welcome Sister Holt to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Sister Holt.
Well, thank you, Brother Lee, for having me, and greetings to your listening audience.
Sister Hope, you and that beautiful voice, you're going to hypnotize them for the next 2 hours. And that's a good thing, because you have plenty of knowledge and experience to share with our people. And one reason why we have you on the program today, because you're a good example in terms of the concept of missing pages of history. You believe in taking from our community and allowing our community to tell their own stories. And you have a life of experiences or stories where people can benefit from. So we're going to talk about some of these experiences that you have encountered in terms of understanding the makeup of our people community and its history. But before we do that, we'd like for you to briefly, if you can, introduce yourself in terms of who you are, where you come from, and et cetera.
Okay, I will try and do that. You know, I'm usually on the opposite end of something like this. It's very difficult to talk about oneself. Well, actually, I'm from Galveston Island. That's where I'm from. But my parents are, well, my mother, she's from a little place in Louisiana called, she was born in an area near Morgan City, Louisiana, which I don't know that much about, but I've been researching our family tree and found out the areas where her parents were from no longer exist. It was called Redfish, Louisiana, and the town has since been renamed, but it was an area where a lot of Native American people settled until they were pretty much decimated by the Europeans who came over and settled in that area and kind of, you know, pushed the people out through their heinous policies. So, but again, I grew up on Galveston Island, and it's about 55 miles from Houston, and I always tell people when I travel, they say, oh, where are you from? You know, and I say, I'm from the island. And they go, oh, which one, the Caribbean or whatever? No, Galveston. They're like, oh, that's not an island. But when you thought about, when people think about Hurricane Ike or Hurricane Harvey, and they shut down that bridge, there's one bridge that links Galveston Island to Houston. There's no way to hit the mainland without that bridge, unless you travel by boat. And it's only then when people really get an understanding, like, oh my goodness, yeah, that really is an island, because there's only one way in and one way out. So being isolated on that island, we've got a chance to live a culture that was pretty much closer to the continent that I knew of. And I was always looking for Africa outside of myself until I met Professor James Small, and he said, you know, if you're looking for Africa outside of yourself, look at your mother. And I thought about just her traditions and her rituals of prayer and family and caring for her community and love of the Creator. And I said, yeah, that there it is right there. Genetically, those things have been passed on through her to her from her great her parents and their great grandparents and so on. So it helped me really to have to form a better and truer understanding of myself. And one of the great mentors that I've had, Randy Weston, he would always say, Africa exists inside of you. Wherever you are, Africa is, meaning for those of us who carry that genetic memory and we're searching and to research the history and understand the culture and how we transition here and what we have to do to reconnect, that one principle that he spoke of helped me to further my studies, but to understand that I was walking genetically with this material that I could activate at any time.
Okay, Sister Hope, many people in Texas probably know you as a radio personality. Can you talk about mm-hmm. the nature of your work on the radio and how people can listen to your station? But the main thing I would like for you to talk about is How are you using the airways to help improve your community?
Well, I got started in radio. My background is journalism and theater and the arts. But I got started in radio at KTSU, which is one of the oldest black universities, public universities here in Houston. And they had one of the oldest black public stations in Texas. And so that it was a place where a lot of students did their internship. Many of my colleagues went on to do their internships at, you know, major TV stations and other radio stations. But I realized even back then that they didn't have the freedom to report and edit on just general things that were happening in the community. But at a public station, you could pretty much bring your story, pitch your story. If it's a good story, they'll run it. Whereas, you know, in commercial media, there were all of these controls, and students had very little opportunity to actually be on the air. And so I fell in love with public media because you can do your research, you can edit, you can write, you can do, you know, your editing. You learn everything all in one, and then it's up to the host of the show to say, okay, we can run that or not. And if it's quality, they would run it. And so I stayed at KTSU for a while doing news, and then after that I ended up inheriting a talk show called Miles Ahead from a sister. I believe she's from Grenada, and I was her understudy. And one Saturday she called in and she said, I quit. And I was terrified. I'm like, you quit? What? I can't do this. I'm just a student. And she says, no, I think you're capable. You've been my understudy for some time now, and you can do this. And she just sort of threw me in the frying pan. And I was absolutely terrified. In fact, people were calling the station trying to figure out, is there really anyone on the air today? I mean, I did the program, but I spoke very little because I was extremely, extremely shy. And but eventually, I was able to blossom and produce the show. And it was a four-hour program, you know, music and public affairs. It was very long to do something like that for 4 hours each and every Saturday. So I did that for a couple years, and then after that, I made my way over to Pacifica. At that time, Dr. Laila Africa was coming through, and there was a woman there. Her name was Ayo. She hosted a show. I forgot the name. But anyway, she ended up marrying Dr. Africa, and she left, and that spot was open, and someone took over that program and asked me to join. So that's how I started with Pacifica back in the day. Very, very early on. But I was able to bring some of my expertise from a public radio station as far as vetting true stories, vetting stories versus propaganda, and, you know, helping even volunteers to understand everything is not news. Just because it's being reported on or just because it's in the paper, I was fortunate enough to have the kind of professors who taught us the difference between propaganda, information, and just fluff, just pieces that were, you know, just there to take up space. But then I realized in black media and in black radio, there was very little information. Lots of music, lots of entertainment, but not much information, and especially very little information about the African continent. So we set about, our first program was called Reflections Black on Black. And our goal was to make sure that we had segments in that program to address issues regarding the Africa diaspora, the African diaspora. And at that time, there were several people on the national board who were very active, and I had a chance to meet some people, and they introduced me to the great Ilombe Brass. Of course, Ilombe was producing out of New York City, our station, WBAI. Praises and peace be upon his soul, he and his wife, may he rest in peace. And of course, Ilombe, if you know his history, he was connected to Patrice Lumumba. I think he organized Patrice Lumumba's first visit to America, and he was very instrumental in organizing Nelson Mandela's visit to America after he was incarcerated for, you know, the 27 years, however long it was. And so, you know, Ilombe was a powerhouse of information and not just stuff that he had read in books and stuff that he wrote about, but he also traveled, you know, to the continent and lived many of these experiences. So it was really an enlightenment to have him on repeatedly in Houston via the airways to talk to our audience about what was happening on the continent from, you know, just from having his feet on the ground. And so, you know, from that, we went on to just continue to produce programs dealing with any topic that was of interest to the public here in Houston and abroad. At that time, there were some things happening in Ethiopia, excuse me, and in Haiti. And we had a sister who moved from Houston and lived in Haiti, and she would keep us abreast on what was going on. And so I was able to just check out the landscape and realize that in Black media and Black radio, there was not, I'm not going to say there wasn't any interest, but there wasn't enough effort, in my opinion, by the powers that be to connect our community to what was happening internationally. And people would call me and complain. They're like, look, why do you keep talking about Haiti and Sudan and all these other places? We're Black right here in Houston, and there are things happening in our on our block and in our neighborhood. And I said to people, when they would say that to me, I said, yeah, there are things happening. We're Black everywhere, all over the world. And it's all still news and information that we can use and pass on. So just because something is happening on your block doesn't exclude us in reporting what's happening in South Africa or any other place. So, you know, now we live in a world where people are connected and the world is one. You know, when you turn on the news, they talk about all these different parts of the world as though, you know, we are familiar with those lifestyles and those the politics in those areas. But even still today, when you realize what's going on the African continent, you see very little reports unless something catastrophic happens. So now, of course, Robert Mugabe, the former president of Zimbabwe, has passed. And if you look at the headlines, they call him the strong man of Africa. So my thought was, if he was the strong man of Africa, then my goodness, who was Richard Nixon and who was Lincoln and who was all these people that were a part of oppressing us? What were their titles? So Black people, Black audiences, we have to really be careful about how we're labeled and how the story is told. When I saw a little clip on TV, you know, this morning, about 1 or 2 in the morning, I saw them showing clips of Mugabe removing white farmers from from Zimbabwe. But they didn't give anyone the backstory about apartheid, how they removed all those Africans from their land. So I want to encourage the audience, any story that you see, any story, even what I'm saying to you today, feel free and be independent and research and look for the facts and the truth of the matter. Because what we're getting now, we're getting headlines and bait click. You know, people get paid every time you click on a story online. That doesn't mean that that story is worthy of your attention. And so we have to understand what's happening now in media. It's something totally different than what has happened in the past. And, you know, I don't want to go too far off topic here, but media literacy now is my big thing because people are consuming so much information online on the online platforms, and they take it as truth. But if you really think that's true, then just look at some stories that are unfolding that are topics today. For instance, you could just take the story of President Robert Mugabe and how they are telling his legacy and his story through their lens. And remember what Toni Morrison said. She said that it was her goal to teach herself and others how to not tell a story through the white gaze. And in media, we have to understand that same set of principles. Otherwise, we're not raising the awareness of our people. We're just sharing facts.
Sister Hope, if you can, I want to back up just a little bit and get your perspective on can you talk to your audience just a little bit on the distinction between propaganda and information?
Mm-hmm. Well, propaganda, if I can give an example, and some of your audience may disagree with me, but I think one of the biggest propaganda machines that I've seen, of course, was when we got here we arrived at this country, and all the imagery that we saw with black people with big, you know, everything was exaggerated. Without just going through the laundry list, everything was exaggerated. Our features, our looks, you know, the depiction of us being lazy and eating watermelon and not wanting to work, even though we built this country, the images that were projected to non-black Americans were images that were detrimental to us as a people. And they were not, they were so far from the truth, because we did back-breaking work. We worked until, you know, this work killed us, and we built this place. And yet, the very people who brought us here put out imagery that we were less than human, that we were, you know, coons and buffoons and all that. So, yeah, that's another example of propaganda. But I would say the most modern version of it, I would think, was the stories and the way they reported on MJ, Michael Jackson, you know, 10, 11 years after his death, there is still all of these negative stories being reported about him and allegations about him, even though the man was cleared twice in a court of law. He was surveilled by the FBI for 10 years worldwide, computer surveilled, house raided twice, unbeknown to him, and they found not absolutely one piece of evidence to arrest him, to convict him on those allegations. Whereas if you see the recent case, the Epstein case, this man has been doing this stuff for, you know, decades, and yet we're just hearing about it now because his powerful friends in the media chose to bury his stories and bury the story of Weinstein. All those stories were completely buried, and then, you know, we get to hear almost every day, 5-6 times a day, about allegations with regard to Michael Jackson. That is another example of propaganda. And so my question to a lot of people, especially to reporters who are trained to do this work, I've said on my program, what evidence does Dan Reed have that the FBI did not have with regard to Michael Jackson? What evidence did HBO have that the FBI did not have? And we know there is no way that they would allow a brother to just walk away from some allegations like that. There's absolutely no way. So I think it's absolutely insane that our community, we even engage in a discussion of the way that these people have worked diligently to destroy this man's legacy while they're exploiting his legacy and making money off of it. Because if you look at the streaming numbers, his songs are still one of the highest streaming sources out there. You can't even click on one of his videos without an ad. So if his image is so tainted, then why do all these corporate companies continue to attach their brand to his name? And so we've got to be really savvy and smart about what's going on, because I think the big to diminish his legacy in the eyes of our children, who do not have the maturity to make that distinction. And yet, as I mentioned, if you click on any of his YouTube videos anywhere, you see every single major corporation advertising on this man's streaming songs. So that's another example of the biggest propaganda machine that one has ever seen in life. And with regard to all the allegations against him, just realize that there's been no discussion or talk to people like Diana Ross or his band members. And by the way, his band was mostly, you know, 90% African American, that his band members who stayed with him for over 30 years, None of those people have ever been interviewed, people who were close to him. So, and then you have people who say, well, he began to have all these surgeries and look weird and so forth. He must be guilty. I think that is the most cruelest, asinine, simple-minded assessments to make about someone. So, yeah, that is another modern-day propaganda machine to taunt, to taint Michael's image, because he outsmarted them at their own game. And the bottom line is, before he died, if people want to go online and look at Dick Gregory and Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson's father. And Dick Gregory talks about how Michael's dad asked him to help him escape, you know, what he was experiencing, because it was going to cost him his life. You know what I mean? And so, and Dick went to get Michael. And so anyway, I don't want to go too far off the rails with that story, but there's a lot to what happens when you have these conglomerates who can get a hold to your legacy. And then they are in control over, you know, 50 and 60 various news outlets. They're in control of that, and they can taint your legacy because one push of the button, as we saw in the case of Donald Trump. I mean, the man who was with the National Enquirer, you know, got immunity for talking about, you know, how they chose not to run stories against him, but I think they ran over 100 stories against Clinton. So that's another example, Hillary Clinton by example. That's another example of propaganda.
And just to add to your point, we'll have to go into it. One will also have to ask the question, why Oprah Winfrey played the role that she played to try to discredit
yes.
him. The community
yes.
is highly
yes.
upset over her particular role and what that was mm-hmm. all about.
Yeah, yeah,
so anyway.
That's true. And I thought she was just doing that for HBO, but when I was looking on her own site, she actually has that exit interview on her site. Yeah, so it's really interesting that they made that deal with her to do that.
Sister Hope, you have a large listenership on your program where you're host on Sunday evenings, and you work with another radio station also. Talk about your radio station. How can people hear you on Sunday evenings?
Okay, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question again?
Talk about the radio station that you are a host on, where you MC on a regular basis on Sunday evening, and what are some of the things that you're trying to convey to that program. You also have a relationship with another program called Connecting the Dots, and
mm-hmm.
how can people find these radio shows? Because I found them very informative and different. It's the type of format and information I think that people need to be exposed to. So can you just share with
mm-hmm.
our audience a little something about your radio show? How can they listen to these shows?
Okay, yes, thank you for that question. The show that I produce and host on Sundays is called Pan-African Journal, and it airs at 7 p.m. Central. I'm sorry, 7 p.m. Eastern and 8 p.m. Central, and it's on for an hour. It's sort of like a news magazine format where we look at the culture and we look at the we examine various countries and so forth, and provide experts like yourself to call in to talk about different issues impacting us and impacting the African continent. So it's an open program. We also do local stories as well. Recently, we had a local group to travel to the continent and take some children. And so they were on promoting the trip and talking about you know, what they were going to do in Ghana and how long they were going to stay, and inviting the community to be a part of that travel. And so we really tried to make sure that show is open to the community that we serve, and that, you know, people understand that you can call anytime and talk about, you know, your group or your community or any work that they're doing. So that's basically what Pan-African Journal is. It didn't always start out that way. Initially, it was, you know, more structured. But then as we see the consolidation of media and very little access of community news, very little access, we want to make sure that the public understand that we're there for them. And so, again, we sort of have an open door policy, even though the program is entitled Pan-African Journal.
And the radio station number, where they can dial into or find on radio?
Yeah, they can listen to us online at kpft.org. We are part of the Pacifica Network, and Pacifica has 5 complete stations around the country, and we are part of that. So www.kpft.org is the station, and 90.1 FM is the actual call number.
You know, Sister Hope, you've been privileged to have access and be around and work with many, many well-known people. Now, having access to many, many well-known people, what are some of the things you have learned from them or they have taught you that you think may be of significance to pass on to our community and to our youth?
Well, I've learned so much. I don't even know where to start. Let's see. Make sure that one stays open to understand that we're just a conduit. We are not the show or the program. We are just a conduit for our community to access information, to share information, and to be that window of opportunity for young people or for elders or for people who are incarcerated, any community that feels that they don't have access or that they have been marginalized by corporate media, to make sure that, you know, we go the extra mile to reach out to those communities. I've since been doing some programming around mass incarceration, because as you know, Texas is, and California are like the number 2 states that lead numbers in mass incarceration. And if you look at our skyline downtown, it's just full of jails. Whereas most cities you go, I mean, you see the corporate buildings or whatever, but now, you know, in Houston, our skyline is also major jails that go up 20 feet or so in the air. And it's really tragic because there's also a juvenile detention center downtown. And, of course, with the immigration issue, we've been raising awareness about the many families and children who've been disrupted, their lives have been disrupted through this particular policy. And again, just making sure that our community understands that we're there for them, that, you know, we're a source of information to share information. And also we like to do fun things. For many years we were able to bring in people like Randy Weston, Amiri Baraka, Dick Gregory's daughter, Ayanna Gregory, Last Poets, and on and on, you know, to bring cultural institutions to Houston to share with the community. They act as a resource for people who may not be able to travel to some of the other major cities to see black performers. Even though Houston is the 4th largest city, there are very few organizations that are committed to making sure that our progressive arts, our progressive African-American artists and arts are heard and seen in town. So one of the facilities that we used and produced for over 2 decades, gosh, we've had audiences of up to 10,000 people. You know, it seats, the theater itself seats about 1,500 to 1,700, and then there's a huge shield that can hold another 8,000 people. So, you know, we wanted to make sure, again, that the public understood, that our community understood that our talent exists beyond what we saw, what we see on TV, and often beyond what we hear on the radio, because everything we see and hear is controlled. It's called programming. every single thing, and I'm not sure if people understand that, even with these smartphones. In fact, I'm going to buy me a new phone, a flip phone, that I just use to make calls. And my smartphone, I'll just use it like a computer, because I don't appreciate every single thing I do is being tracked on the smartphone. And I had a friend who knew someone who worked in this industry, and he doesn't have a smartphone. He said, it's just too much tracking going on, way too much. So, but having said that, I just, you know, want to encourage the public to understand that program yourself, program your family, get out of the matrix. And just because you see something on your phone called a news feed, that's someone else's programming based on whatever websites you clicked on or based on whatever you trolled on Facebook or Twitter. And so you want to be independent. You can actually go online on your laptop, and you can go and find out news and information. There's a site called allafrica.com, and it will tell you what's going on from the ground on basically on any with regard to any African country. But there are many cities in America where news is happening every day. And if you want to know what's happening, you just have to call those cities. And that's the biggest thing, takeaway that I have that I want to share with the audience, young or old, is that my professor told me, and he's dead now, may he rest in peace, Dr. George McElroy. He said, if you didn't see it with your eyes, and if you did not report it with your eyes, it's secondhand news. So any news and information that you see is second. By the time you see it on TV and hear it on radio, it's third-hand news. And the test to that is to see how, for instance, doing the uprising after Michael Brown got killed or Eric Garner or any of those issues, when you saw how fast that stuff had been posted on Twitter and Facebook, and then it would take the news media almost a week to report the same thing. So that just tells you the chain of command that stories go through. And also, as an audience and as a listener and a consumer of information, you have the right to call. If you see a story that you think is maligning your community or a story that you think is biased, call the news director at any TV station or any radio station. Call them and tell them what you feel and what you think, because your call represents the voice of thousands of people. That's the way they track information, or you could send them an email. And they do listen. They do listen to the feedback. And a lot of times in our community, we will complain about how things are reported, or we'll complain about a reporter who may have been biased, but we don't often call the news director or the general manager or the vice president or president of the company. And we have the right to do that if you feel that the information and news you're consuming with your eyes and ears and your spirit is not in alignment with what you are living every day. So if something is disturbing you inside that you see and you know, hey, like the instance, the last piece, and this wasn't propaganda, was when they ran the story on Galveston Island of the man who was had mental illness, and they saw these two white officers walking this man with a rope around his neck, and they were on horses. Now, don't you know, this little tiny island, they're doing damage control on that story. They got rid of the policy, if there ever was a policy. We don't know that. It may have been a policy from the 1800s. But sometimes these things occur, and the people want to say, oh, it was a policy, we got rid of it. No, it never should have happened. Number one, where are the mental health advocates? Because even if there was a policy on the books, this man was a known mental health patient. And I'm told that the regular officers on the beat, they knew him. They knew when he was off his medication. They knew exactly what to do to take him to the clinic or to the hospital and get him treatment. Whereas the other people, they knew he was having a mental health crisis, and they didn't give a darn. And they just decided to parade him through the town, and they forgot, oh, my God, we're a tourist town. There are people with phones that are taking pictures of this. So there is a more humane way to treat mental health patients, okay? So even though he was African-American, he was also mentally disturbed. And I didn't hear much outrage from the mental health advocates and the mental health community about that story. So I was told, though, that people from around the country actually came to the courthouse, and they also called. And so these are the kinds of stories that our community should respond to, and not just negative stories, but also respond to stories that you think are that should be told. There are some stories that are overlooked. And so, you know, we have to be advocates about what we're taking in with our eyes and ears in our community. We just cannot sit back and consume media like it's popcorn, because all popcorn doesn't taste well, and we know that.
Sister Ho, we got two more questions. We'd like to thank you for your patience for participating at today's program. The next mm-hmm. question I'd like to raise with you and get your feedback, I thought you had a really interesting outlook on this issue of cultural appropriation or cultural exploitation, looking at the heightened condition of racism in this country throughout the world as relates to African people, while at the same time there seems to be a love for African culture and even using that culture to make money off it, where they are benefiting and we are not. Can you just speak to that issue and what you have observed or been or seen as relates to this whole question? Others are using mm-hmm. our culture to benefit, whereas we are still being left out.
Yeah, we're being left out. Some of that is by default, though, because, again, our community, we've got to step it up and not be so passive and think it's someone else's job and someone else's responsibility. In Houston, whenever there's a major African company coming here to dance, perform, sing, or whatever, there was a group of women that I used to work with, and we, for instance, the African Children's Choir or the Soweto Children's Choir. Well, we got together with the black social workers and the black midwives, and we found out how many children were in that group, and we bought books and book bags for those children. And do you know, locally, they told us that, oh, you can't do this. So I said, okay, no problem. I called New York. I called the producers in New York and told them what we wanted to do, not what we were trying to do, but what we wanted to do. And they just thought it was a lovely idea. So they had to call Houston and say, hey, no, back up. Let these women deal with these children on this level. And so when the children came to perform, we went backstage and presented those items to them, and they were just, they couldn't believe it. I had never been hugged like that. The way those children hugged us for presenting that information, those backpacks to them, it was just absolutely incredible. And that was just one of many examples. We had a group to come from Senegal, and so we decided we wanted to do a dinner for them. There was a group that came from Ethiopia. We hosted them and did a dinner for them. And the reason why they came to Houston, there was a big international festival. The president of Ethiopia was here at the time. The Ethiopian consulate was representing the country as well. And the dinner was like $10,000 a ticket. But just through some networking and advocacy, you know, I was able to get a couple passes to attend. And, of course, you know, no one that looked like us was in the audience. But the fact that one of the diplomats from Ethiopia, and he passed away too, he was able to make that happen for us. And we were sitting in the audience. Oh, I tell you what, they were unveiling Lucy. And this man was sitting, he made this happen for us to get into this very expensive, high-profile dinner. And they had worked for 10 years to make sure that Lucy came to Houston first. And the oldest remains at that time that would have been found of African, of people of African descent or any background. So this guy sits in the audience, and he was telling these reporters from all over the world these stories. And he said to them, look, if it wasn't for the African Americans, Ethiopians would be speaking Italian. People are like, what? He said, yeah, when we were fighting the Italians, it was African Americans who came over to help us. I had not heard that information. And then after some digging, I found out that there was a group from New York and some other places that went over to Ethiopia to help them fight and win that war against Italy, you know. But again, this was an event that wasn't planned by me or anyone I knew. It was planned by a major institution in Houston, but we, you know, we asserted ourselves and asked to be at the table. And when we got some roadblocks about that, we definitely made arrangements with the people from Ethiopia who said, no, you know, these are our sisters and brothers, and, you know, she's a reporter, she reports on Africa, and we want her there. So sometimes we just have to assert ourselves and be in the room. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, very little funding is coming to Black organizations to present culture and cultural events from the continent or from anywhere. And that is a huge problem because the corporate companies are not funding our events like they used to. So what do we do about that? Well, we still have a lot of money here, Black people do, in America. And we spend very little of that money on ourselves. So some kind of way we have to figure out, Brother Lee, how to recycle those dollars back to our own culture and not expect for our oppressors to pay for it, you know. And I think that's probably a little bit of the problem, not totally the problem, because we have the resources. We can do it. But do we have the will? And that part I'm just not quite sure about, if we have the will. And for those of us who do have the will, we just need the support, like the work that you're doing. You need the support in order to do the work that you're doing.
And Sister Hope, our last question for today is, what has influenced you to be the kind of fighter, to be the kind of server? Because a lot of people don't need to be a servant. They think it's something bad. But in revolutionary struggle and movement, when you're trying to advance your people forward, that's one of the highest awards you can get, is to be a servant to the people. And that's how I see you. I see you as a servant. But I think what we have done at this point in time, we have lost our sister, but we'd like to thank her for her contribution to today's program. And we wanted to make sure that in our community, we have many people who are doing positive things. We have many people that are doing positive things. And we want you to take some time, acknowledge these individuals who are doing positive things. Sometimes just a little bit of reinforcement, you know, can be very important. This is why we have Sister Hope on the program tonight, because she has been a very positive individual who doing what she can to impact not only her community but humanity. But Sister Hope, we just want to ask you, what allowed you to have the kind of fight spirit that you have today? How were you able to evolve with that kind of spirit?
Well, brother, of course, we always give credit to the Creator and our ancestors. I'll say that. But I had a grandmother that I mentioned to you, who we were on the phone a couple of weeks ago. And this grandmother, her name was Hattie Odoms, and she had 14 children, she and my grandfather. And they owned two homes that were right next door to each other on the island of Galveston. She was not from there. She was from another little small town in Texas. But I would sit with her on each and every Sunday, and she loved to watch 60 Minutes. And little did I know that she was shaping my worldview. Watching 60 Minutes with her, she would always have her own commentary after each story. And she would say, you know, because she read a lot, and she was an Eastern Star as well. And I imagine she knew some things that I just didn't know as a child. And she would say, that is not how it happened. That is not what happened. And she would be debating the journalist on the air. At that time, I had no idea that it was shaping my worldview to question, to examine, to investigate. One of my dear friends, Ayana Ade, who's passed away, she was a midwife as well, and she would always say, no investigation, no right to speak. So I would like to pass that on to your audience. If you see a story, hear a story, and it doesn't make sense, don't speak about it. Investigate first before you pass along some bad information. We've all received information that Facebook is tainted, which is why I'm not on it anymore, that the Russians used it to control the outcome of the election. Houston was one of the towns that they planned several protests and counter-protests between Black Lives Matter and white activists, white supremacists. I remember exactly the day when that march was supposed to happen and these two groups were going to be opposing each other. Just imagine someone pulling the puppet strings for that. They were outside of this country. They were, you know, in Russia. So, again, we're being played, not as a community, but as a people, you know, worldwide. And it's not just people of African descent. People, humanity is being played because now you're being told that the matrix is the truth and that matrix is those social media platforms, not the internet itself, but the social media platforms, which sort of control what you see, what you hear. And that's one of the reasons why I don't care for Facebook, because they actually, remember when Facebook first happened, the algorithms were set to where you could see almost any and everything that your friends post. And then they decided, no, you will only see the friends that you interact with. But yet they let the Russians have access to all of us with their misinformation. So something is wrong with that paradigm. So I'm not saying to people, don't use social media. I'm saying use it with caution. And I know that wasn't the exact question you asked me, but I do want to say these little things of caution. And for people who put your children and your babies on there, imagine that if anything were to happen to your child, that people are now taking images of your children and using them in other countries. So be careful putting images of your children and what they're doing and where they play football and where they go to dance class and church and school. People, look, you have to be a guardian of your family and more guarded about how you share intimate information about your family. You could put the little birthday party on there once it's over, but why would you put a birthday party on there in real time? Or why would you put your huge house with your two expensive cars and you're opening up Christmas presents in real time for someone to come and rob you? So be careful how you're consuming and using social media. But your question, to be exact, was to talk about, you know, you had mentioned how we use it for good. I think media literacy is the way to go in the future, because of so much misinformation out there. And it didn't just start with social media. The propaganda machine, as someone said, started the moment we stepped foot on these soils. And even before then, when you look at all these books these Europeans wrote in observation about going to the continent and observing us as though we were animals in a cage and writing from their own biased perspective. And so, again, one of the things that my grandmother would echo, she didn't have necessarily the sophistication to say, no investigation, no right to speak, but that's exactly what she taught me in her own way, particularly about news information and propaganda that we see on TV and in newspapers.
Sister Hope, in closing, I just want to make a statement to you and get a response. In closing, we need more critical voices like yours to come into our community and talk to our people. So how can we make it possible where your voice can be heard throughout our communities, outside on the radio? Because you need to be among our people, which I know you are. But we must decide who is best capable to do this. And we want to know, Missing Pages and our listening audience, how can they get in touch with you to invite you to come to our community and talk to our community based on your experiences?
I'm so honored that you've said that. For years and years and years, Brother Lee, I'm the kind of person that will hide behind the mic, or if people ask me to speak, if I have to, I will. It's like, oh, that's not what I really want to do. I love being behind the mic. And then a brother told me recently, sister, you got to come from behind that mic, let the people hear what you got to say. I'm like, but I really don't have anything to say other than what have I experienced.
So, agree with
but yeah, but if
one of the one of the things you will learn, if you haven't already learned, and you can finish your statement, sometimes you don't get to choose. Sometimes you don't get to choose.
Yeah,
history chooses you.
True.
But go ahead, sister.
Yeah. No, that's a good statement, because I think that's what has occurred here. I didn't choose this work either. You know, we don't always choose it. You're right. History chooses us. And I had no idea why, as a student, I was attracted to public radio as opposed to going making a whole bunch of money in corporate media. And by the way, many of my friends were laid off, you know, way back in the 90s and struggled to keep jobs in corporate media, because there is a glass ceiling in corporate media. And now it's horrible. It's the statistics of black independent voices in corporate media are almost zero. And then you look at black radio, they think that we're not interested in news and information, but yet we're in the era where news and information is like cotton. It's king. So the question is, why on black radio all we're hearing is music every day to lull us to sleep, as though we're not interested or we're not worthy of being enlightened with the same amount of news and information that impacts and affects our community as others? So those are some questions we have to ask to the media outlets that we consume. But people can reach me on email, Amandala Productions, AMAND as in Daoud, LA Productions with an S at Gmail. And everybody knows Amandala. That's the word that Nelson Mandela uttered when he got out of prison. He said Amandala. Or captivity, should I say. He said a mandala, and the people said Lewetu, and he was saying power, and they said Lewetu is ours. So a mandala productions, the power is all ours.
And on that note, sister, we'd like to thank you for filling in one of our missing pages of history, and you were definitely a voice from the outside speaking to our people. That's the kind of voice we need.
You
typifies the theme today, news from our outside. We'd like to encourage you to continue to do the work that you're doing, and Missing Page of History will always be for you if you need a place to speak. You are now part of our family. Again, we thank you for your contribution.
Well, thank you, Brother Lee. And one last thing, it'd take me 10 seconds to say this. Please, to the audience, check out the stories on Sugarland 95. Sugarland 95, 95 Africans were found that had been buried since the late 1800s on a sugar plantation in Houston, a little bit outside of Houston in the suburb. And it was Imperial Sugar that owned the land, and they were leased out to the state for labor. And these were like the South African pass laws. These were people who were walking the streets after Emancipation Proclamation, and they didn't have jobs, or like one man was sentenced to life because he couldn't pay a bill. I think the bill was, you know, $4 or $5, you know. And the youngest child was 12, sentenced to life in hard labor, and there was also a woman among them. So people are fighting for the right to properly bury these Africans and reinter them, and to create a memorial to make sure that we will never forget their stories and their lives being just totally taken away from them, their freedom. Even after they were freed from captivity, they were thrown back into convict leasing for no reason other than corporate greed. So, again, that's the Sugarland 95 story that's happening now as we speak.
And just to add to your point, they are trying to desecrate all African burials throughout this country. We have a similar story here in this capital of the state of Virginia called Richmond and all throughout.
Mm.
So it's something about wanting to eradicate all aspects of African people history. I don't know what that is about, but we do know, but it's left to us to preserve, to write, and protect our history. So again, Sister Hope, I salute to you. We thank you very much
thank
for your contribution
to
today's program.
Thank you,
right,
and I salute your work as well.
We thank you. All right, you listen to Sister Q Hope. She was sharing her perspective on this whole question of her experiences coming from the African community. And she's one not only came from our community, but she's one who now forgot it. She's one who is a walking history book, but she is one who is acting responsible in terms of understanding that the only purpose for knowledge is to use it and give it back to make it a better world. So on that note, we'd like to thank the sister again. Right now, we're going to pause for this call. When we come back, we're going to make our final remarks and our closing on how you can help MPH. Don't you go nowhere. We'll be right back. And we want you to, let's stay together. September the 21st at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We also would like to remind you that you need to keep your eyes and ears open, that we will be having an upcoming MPH TV show on Comcast. Right now, Comcast is reviving their schedule, and we are waiting to hear from them where they can tell us when we'll be on. So once we get that information, we will share that with you. And last but not least, we have open membership drive. This organization can only serve the community only by understanding that you are a part of us and we're a part of the community. We need your support. We're looking for new membership with expertise in various in all areas that we can benefit from. So if you're interested in building MPH, we ask you to you can go to our website at www.mphinc.org or just email us at missingpagesofhistory1 pagerhistory1@yahoo.com. Mr. pagerhistory1@yahoo.com, and we will respond to you. So in closing, we'd like to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to come to your home. We also like to give our respect and a shout out to President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe. He was one of our freedom fighters who fought a terrific job in terms of understanding the importance of independence, the importance of freedom, and being an example of resistance. Brother Robert, rest in peace. Your legacy will always be in the history book of our people. We thank you for all that you have done for Africa, African people, and humanity. So again, you have been listening to MPH History. We need your support. You can send your contributions to MPH Inc. or Missing Pages History at P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, zip code 23261. Where there is economic dependency, there cannot be no freedom. So we need your support. Support MPH Radio by sending a contribution to us. So until next time, we'd like to encourage you to continue to read history and continue to write and fill in our missing pages of history. So we'll see you next week, same time, same station. And like always, if we want our rights, we got to do what? Get up and stand up. We'll see you next week.
Get up, stand up,
in the morning.
Give it up,
stand up for your rights.